WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive, hoping you're setting your dial out there at AM 1570. We still have a radio station around here, and you still have a dashboard. Make sure you're checking that out. We're going to be checking out the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on Thursday. New place. We're going to be in Middle River, then at the end of Back River Neck Road, at the end of Rocky Point, back where I grew up as a kid, down on the Porter's Beaches. We're going to be down at McFall's Oyster and Reel. I've never been there yet. I'm looking forward to that. Know the McFall's family pretty well. We're going to be doing the crab cake over there. We have some great visitors and friends. We'll be giving away some scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery, the 50th anniversary scratch-off. We had some winners the other day on Thursday. We had some winners down at Captain Larry's. Had great conversations down there with Shannon Toback and my dude Chris Reel and Todd Schultz. Came out then on Friday. We went to Fadley's. We had controller Bill Henry with us on Friday. Ron Legler from the Hippodrome, one of the really good dudes in the city, as the Hippodrome rips it up on the back end of Chris Rock and all the subscriptions. We talked some crabs and catfish and all sorts of stuff. All of it brought to you by our friends at Window Nation. I got my Window Nation shirt on as well. We're into May. 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. 5 years, 0% financing. Do what I did, except get a better deal than I got last summer. We do. I love our windows. I tell you what, this guy's been peering out the window and not jumping off the ledge in regard to Ravens football, but Orioles baseball. It's so, you know, I know people are going to tune in. They're going to say, hey, why are you talking about the Orioles? Didn't they sign Lamar? And it's fascinating that we're into May, and I don't know which direction to go in, but we took a pretty deep dive on the draft. How about those Baltimore Orioles, Luke Jones? They can't lose a series, can they?
They can't lose a series. They can't lose a series opener, which they literally have not done that yet this year. But, boy, you get to the end of April and you're 10 games above 500, and I get it. You know, we can talk about the schedule. We can talk about the fact that they've beaten up on teams that aren't that good, but you're 10 games over 500 at the end of April. I mean, just think about that in terms of what you have to do the rest of the way to, you know, just be a
500 90, team
or just be a 90 win team, you know, which right. is the kind of territory that should secure a wild card or be right there at the very least. You know, you the more work you do now, the more you beat up on some of these lesser teams, the less you have to do against some of the behemoths that you're going to be playing in the not too distant future. And look, that doesn't mean that they're going to continue to win every single series and they're going to continue to play, you know, a 700 ball, you know, 680 ball, whatever it is, but you know, it's been fun and they don't necessarily make it easy. And you look at it, they rarely win in blowout fashion. Like we're seeing Tampa Bay, who has a plus 100 of run differential.
That's
already
insane, by the way, a month into
it's crazy,
season.
Right? I mean, it's not quite the 84 Tigers,
but you're scoring three runs more than the other team all month long. It's insane.
Crazy. It's impressive. It is. So from that standpoint, it's not the juggernaut that they're just blowing you away on a nightly basis, but boy, they're just winning games. And the things that they do well, they do really well. And we've seen it with the bullpen since the first 10 days or so of the season. The bullpen's been outstanding. The starting pitching overall has been better. Not perfect, but better. And certainly we can talk about someone like Dean Kramer or Kyle Bradish being very much up and down since coming back from the IL. But they're winning games, and it's just been a lot of fun. And I get it. It's the Detroit Tigers. You should take 3 out of 4 from a team like Detroit, but they're doing it. You know, they're doing what they're supposed to do. And that's a big part of it when you're talking about a 162-game marathon. You're going to go through your bumps and your valleys, and you're going to go through some rough patches of the schedule where you're playing tough teams and you're going to lose 2 out of 3. And you might even lose 4 or 5 in a row at some point. But you put in the work that the Orioles have put in over the first month of the season. It just keeps yourself in so much better position to endure some of those tough times that certainly will be ahead at some point.
Well, I wonder where the tough times are, right? Are the tough times when Mountcastle's hitting 150 and can't get out of his own way and can't drive in runs? Are the tough times when they have 3 or 4 nights where their pitcher can't get out of the fourth inning? Are there tough nights where they have a 4-3 lead in the eighth inning and the closer comes in and pisses it all away and gives up a 3-run home run and walks guys? Like, all that's going to happen. It's a season. Bad things are going to happen. But when you have a 10-game cushion to start with, and then I see them doing things that good teams do, which is exactly what I just mentioned that they didn't do. You know, Detroit late in the game, not really sure where they are with the eighth inning situation and ninth inning. We talked about this all off season in the deal they made last summer to sort of clean out their bullpen to make space for other guys. And this has been interesting to watch them and watch Brandon Hyde try to set up whatever the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning looks like, especially on a day when his closers are already spent, right? Like, how are you going to play this and how are you going to get away with it? And all of a sudden, they might have two closers.
That's what's wild. I mean, I think back to the trade they made where they sent Jorge Lopez to Minnesota, and all along I was fine with trading Trey Mancini because, especially with what they were able to get, which is a guy, Seth Johnson's recovering from Tommy John. It's a
Where's he
long
going to be on
term.
this team right now, is your point? 10 games over 500. Where's the place for Trey Mancini on this team right now?
Exactly, because we see when Adley Rutschman's not catching, where is he? He's DHing more. Just about every time he's not catching. What he didn't start the first game of the doubleheader, but then he ended up pinch hitting and coming into the game later on. So you wanted to have that spot that if Trey Mancini was on the roster, you wouldn't have quite as much flexibility there. Point is, putting aside the Trey deal, Jorge Lopez, you looked at that deal and you said, okay, I mean, this is a guy who still has some club control. He's their closer. It was just a nice story making the All-Star team. And you see they get what? Five pitchers back. I think it was five pitchers they got back, four or five. And Yennier Cano kind of felt like he was just a throw-in. I mean, this is not a young man, right, in terms of prospect status. He's not 22 or 23. He's in his late 20s. And when he pitched, albeit limited sample last year for the Orioles, it was not impressive. Command didn't really seem like he knew where it was going. The stuff was okay.
He's got that
But
big,
you just
awkward
kind of
sort of,
looked at him.
doesn't know where the ball's going, kind of. And last year felt that way.
Yeah, it totally felt that way. And I mean, I can remember talking to some reporters even before he was called up. And keep in mind, this is a guy who was in the minor leagues 2.5 weeks ago, which is just wild when you think about it, as far as the high leverage spots that he's been in and he's done so well with. But yeah, there was sentiment that, why is this guy going to stay on the 40-man roster? Why aren't they DFAing this guy? And you outright him to Norfolk. And if you have some injuries later in the season or he gets on a heater, then call him up and see how he does. But for him to do what he's done, and it's different than Bautista because he doesn't throw 101 miles per hour, but he's got the sinker, he's got the off-speed stuff that just moves so well. I mean, it's been really impressive. So when you have him, and we've seen what Brian Baker has done since his rough outing on opening day, you have two guys there that you've been able to slot in that eighth inning, or in the case of Cano, filling in as the closer when Bautista's been unavailable. Because as I mentioned a couple minutes ago, they played all these close games, so you've had a lot of save situations, a lot of high leverage spots late in games that you can plug him in there. And not only is he getting the job done, but he's getting the job done pretty convincingly. He's missing bats and he's retiring hitters and he's not walking guys. He's not pitching into jams. I mean, it's been really, really impressive. So we saw this last year. From the time the Orioles started turning things around in June, what was a big calling card for them? It was their bullpen. And even though the bullpen is not constructed in the same way, and they even have some good problems ahead with Dylan Tate and Michael Givens in terms of slotting them in and who's going to go as a result, they're just in a position where their bullpen is pitching at a really high level. Again, you'd like to see more consistency from the starters. They are getting better starting pitching than they had been the first 2.5, 3 weeks of the season. It was great to see Grayson Rodriguez do what he did over the weekend. And, I think Kyle Gibson, for the most part, has been, kind of what they figured he would be. But it just comes back to that bullpen where you have guys that are just doing a really good job for you. And even on Sunday, when you were in a position where you didn't have some of your best bullpen arms available, they got two scoreless innings from Austin Voth, who is stabilized a little bit, although he walked a couple hitters. And Danny Coulomb has kind of been this year's version of CNL Perez, with Perez struggling out of the gate. But for Cano to come in, get the last out in the bottom of the eighth, and then gets the save for you, it's impressive. And now the challenge is doing that for 6 months And that's easier said than done. And we've seen plenty of teams get off to a good start and then go sideways and vice versa. Teams that'll get off to a slow start and find themselves as the year goes on. But again, you go back to a 19-9 record, and it's not even as though they're firing on all cylinders. You mentioned Mountcastle. I mean, other guys in that lineup not hitting, and you know, we'll get into Jorge Mateo and some guys like that who have been off to great starts, but you know, they're finding
and the
ways
controversial
to win games.
Adam
And
Frazier.
It's not always the most comfortable, but they're winning. Yeah, exactly. Someone who, you know, you and I talked about the Roquan Smith signing in a previous segment with, as it pertains to the Ravens. Adam Frazier, I was not a big fan of that signing whatsoever, but hey, he's got three home runs now, which
hey, neither was Bob and Bob
kind of
at
crazy
the bar and
considering
Captain
a guy
Larry's
who's
on Thursday.
not
You
known
know,
exactly for his pop.
yeah, I'm getting accosted about Adam Frazier, and I'm thinking, it's draft weekend. What's wrong with you people out there? Luke Jones is here. He's Baltimore Luke. We're in a little bit of a delay on his Wi-Fi and our Wi-Fi around here. I want to remind everybody we'll be at McFalls on Thursday doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, presented by the Maryland Lottery and Window Nation. Also going to be celebrating 25 years of WNST this summer. They're not going to be playing any football between now and September, any meaningful football. And this baseball team continues to march on, win series. You talked about the lineup and getting through slumps, and I guess at some point Rutschman will have a slump too, right? I mean, but Hayes has certainly come back into where you want him to be, and I think from a lineup perspective, you mentioned these pitchers and how many of them there are. There's deep depth in some weird way in this organization, and a cavalry coming on. Elias really knows what he's doing, and if we're going to tip caps anywhere a month into this thing and say, how is it going? Boy, the Ravens would love for it to be going this well the first week of October, wouldn't they? I mean, as far as the first month, it's like dreamy other than a line drive off a foot and a couple of, you know, a drop fly ball 3 weeks ago that we're still talking about because it's the only game they lost the whole month. These are first world problems for the Orioles. I mean, this is – it's been impressive for me to watch it as the naysayer and Nasty Nestor and Peter Angela. This is – no offense, and I tell people this all the time when they give me manure about all this. This is why I fought. This is what it's supposed to look like. This is what I've been waiting 30 years for. Like, no offense to 12 and 14 and 16. That was good. That was fun. It was 5 minutes. It was Buck riding weeders like a mule and it's signing the wrong players and the old man still being the old man and like all that. I don't know. I think the organization, I've met TJ Brightman. I've seen John Angelos's act. I'm not going to ignore that, but I'm not going to focus on it when the team is where they are, because on the field, they've done everything you can ask the organization. I mean, it's been a dream first month. I don't know what else to say. Like, it's a pinch me thing to watch this and say, oh, and they're on the front end, and this isn't fake. It's like this is real. This is the real thing.
It is, although I think you're selling 2012 and 2014 short. I mean, this team still needs to do this for 6 months. And that's not to say that they won't, let's be clear. But point was, not in 2012, they won 93 games. And in 2014, what, it was 96 wins, I think it was, off the top of my head. But point was, they did that for 6 months. It's not easy to do. And at this point, you made mention comparing it to the Ravens. Let's keep in mind, 19-9, that's akin to getting off to a 2-1 kind of start in football. You like it, right? You're excited about it, but we also know there's a long way to go. So I think it's also important to keep that proper perspective. However, to share in your enthusiasm, because I am enthusiastic about this baseball team, there are things that you see that can still get better. I mean, they've done what they've done with Gunnar Henderson not hitting the ball. They've done what they've done with some starting pitchers not performing at a particularly high level, like Dean Kramer, for example, who arguably was their best starting pitcher over the second half of last season. You know, you could at least make that argument. So
we certainly look like he belonged in the big leagues.
Yeah. It's not as though everything's going perfectly, but when you have the kind of pitching depth that they have specifically in the bullpen, and we'll see how this plays out with the rotation. And that's even with thoughts of John Means being added to the mix sometime in July, and you don't want to put too much on him, but that's there. You know, we saw DL Hall in a cameo during the doubleheader. You know, we'll see where he fits in as they get deeper into the season, and not saying that that's a sure thing either, but you know, the point is there's still other guys on the way to augment what they already have. I mean, we saw Kyle Stowers recalled on Sunday, and he batted cleanup, you know, which is kind of strange when you think about that, as far as a guy being recalled and he's put right into the cleanup spot for a team that's, you know, at the time was 9 games over .500. So, but it just speaks to the talent that they've assembled. And that's where, to the point that you were making a couple minutes ago, you do compliment Mike Elias and the organization. And, you know, there's still work to be done. There's still going to come a time, like the trade deadline, for example, where they're going to have opportunities to say, all right, this is looking really even better. What can we do to improve our fortunes for the rest of this season and 2024 and 2025? So those decisions, those questions are still there. And I'm not going to shy away from that. And I'm not, and I know you won't either, in terms of talking about payroll and talking about doing things to augment the core that you have. Doesn't mean you're doing it to tear down the core you have. It means you're augmenting, you're supplementing that. So when those opportunities come, that question still remains. Will they pull the trigger on that? Will Mike Elias do it? Will he have ownership support to do that? But in the meantime, you still have to play well enough to put yourself in that position to be a buyer, to put yourself in a position to go get what other piece you need to get, you know, financially, trade a prospect, whatever it might be. But you have to put in the legwork over these next few months to be in that spot. And you can't be happier than what they did in April. I guess if you're the Rays, right? I mean, that's the one thing you could say. I mean, the Rays have just been so good that it's crazy that, you know, you wake up on May 1st and you're 19-9 and you're still 3.5 games out of first place. So, you know, but you kind of knew that, right? Didn't think maybe the Rays, maybe we thought it'd be Toronto, maybe we thought it'd be the Yankees, but the AL East is tough. Breaking news, right? News flash. But the Orioles are proving to be just as tough. And I think that's what's going to be interesting as we get into May. You know, they play Tampa Bay here in the not too distant future. They'll play, they'll go to Toronto, they'll go to the Bronx and later on in May. And we'll see how it plays out. And again, they might even lose a series or two. Imagine that. But again, the work that they put in over this first month of the season, they've put themselves in position to have a really fun summer. And at this point where they are in the rebuild, and where they are payroll wise, where they are contractually with all these guys, that's a fun place to be because you know that there's still room to make this thing even better.
Well, and stack them up this week against Kansas City and then Atlanta over the weekend. They get some real competition finally. Mm-hmm. And they'll play some home baseball here before Preakness time. Luke Jones will be covering all things Orioles baseball. The cavalry and the piece where the DL Hall thing happens and Stowers, and I mean, it's not like Buck where he's hiding out relief pitchers at the Residence Inn, but they certainly are not playing normally, and they are shuttling, and there's always options, you know, with the young players, and then you start to burn them up. Where are you with Hall? And I mean, these are two big prospects that got sort of quietly mixed into the Lamar, you know, sweepstakes over the weekend. There was no oxygen for anything in Detroit over the weekend, including a rainout and a doubleheader. But in the case of the cavalry, it's showing up quietly, pitching a little bit, hitting in the cleanup spot, right? So all those questions I saw Mike Elias get 3 weeks ago when he ships the hours out, those come back again and say, and this is maybe the point of the young man. I think he was 86 at the bar at Captain Larry's on Thursday, talking to me about Adam Frazier, was we have too many players to be screwing around with washed up veterans. And, you know, we have too many young guys that we need to make room for. And I think Elias has been at this a long time, and, you know, St. Louis and Houston, and watching what this pipeline looks like and how to integrate these players. But the names you and I have been talking about, it like, we'll talk about Jackson Holliday today, right? Like, that name's here, but it's not far away all of a sudden. None of these guys are.
Yeah, I mean, in the case of Jackson Holliday, I mean, he's still 19. So he's certainly, we're not going to see him this year, but I would not dismiss the possibility that we see him at some point second half of next year, you know, which, again, not saying that that's bound
well, that's what
to
they
happen,
say about Gunnar Henderson,
hey,
right? He's
production
so
speaks
young
for itself, but yeah, well, and that's why I was even talking with someone. I was actually talking with someone at my church on Sunday morning about Gunnar Henderson, saying you have to be patient. I mean, this guy's 21. He's still walking. I mean, even though he's hitting sub 200. He's got a 348 on base percentage, so he's still getting on base. And look, I'm not saying that's everything, but my point is he is still finding a way to contribute, even though at the surface it doesn't look very good. So you have to be patient with these young guys. But you mentioned Kyle Stowers. I think he's an interesting case. We saw him get caught up last year. Hasn't played when he's been in the majors a whole lot. They clearly haven't shown a lot of confidence in him against left-handed pitching, which I think is something that, you know, people blame Brandon Hyde for that. But let's be clear, lineup construction is not a Brandon Hyde only thing. This is that's a collective, collaborative effort that the front office is heavily involved in. And yes, Hyde might have the quote final say, but
I read Moneyball.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you understand how this works in the modern era. So, but the point with Kyle Stowers is, and this is just one example, and they're doing this with all of their guys at this point in time, but you kind of look at it at this rate now where, you know, he's been at AAA. He's kind of done everything he needs to do at Norfolk. But the question becomes, is he better than Anthony Santander in right field? Is he better than Austin Hayes in left field? Do you feel confident about his ability to play defense in left field, which is a way bigger conversation piece than it was pre-2022, with the wall being different now and there being so much more ground to cover out there? So those are the questions you're kind of looking at with all of these guys now. And that's where things do get complicated a little bit, because you have someone who has been a AAA. You know, Jordan Westberg's another example of this. I mean, a guy who has had extensive at-bats at AAA and extensive success. So that's why a lot of people like me looked at the Adam Frazier signing. And look, Frazier's, you know, he hit a home run. He's been okay. He's hitting 220, you know. Let's not act like he's been, you know, Roberto Alomar or anything like that. But all of these decisions, you're at a point now where you are looking at it in terms of a competition. You are looking at it in terms of, is player A better than player B? A name that I mentioned in passing, but I'll bring him up now because there is so much infield depth, and we just saw Joey Ortiz for a cameo, and he did some nice things over the weekend in Detroit before they optioned him out on Sunday, which a big part of that, I think, was, you know, they had some lefties lined up, you know, lefty starters going against them. And, you know, now you bring Stowers back because you're going to be facing some right-handed starters. But in the offseason, there was so much talk about Jorge Mateo and the fact that his on-base percentage was so low last year. Everyone loves his defense, right? Let's be clear about that. Everyone loves his speed. Let's be clear about that. That was stating the obvious. And even his biggest detractors last year saw the value there. But the big caveat over the course of the offseason was what? He's got to post a higher on-base percentage than he did last year in order to to remain an everyday player. When you do have Joey Ortiz coming, you do have Jordan Westberg, you have Gunnar Henderson who can play shortstop. Yes, you have Jackson Holliday who's a couple years, you know, down the line, but they have a lot of infielders. You know, newsflash, I think we all could kind of see that at this point in time. But look at Mateo. I mean, this guy has arguably been the MVP of the American League in the first month of the season. I mean, he's been the Orioles, even with Rutschman playing at a high level. He's been the Orioles MVP in terms of wins above replacement. So, you know, he's stealing bases. He's hitting for power, still playing really good, excellent defense. And, you know, he's even mixed in, you know, not a ton of walks, but he's cut down on the strikeouts and, you know, walking maybe a little bit more here and there. But the point is, I mean, I don't think he's going to hit 347 all year. You know, let's be clear about that. But we're seeing someone who already made a jump last year looking like he's making another jump this year. And boy, now you're talking about a guy who's starting to profile.
That was something we weren't counting on.
No, not at all. I mean, this is a guy who
washed
out.
This is how you're 10 games over 500. You overproduce. We're expecting Rutschman to be Rutschman. We're expecting Mullins to be maybe not what he was 2 years, but he's a major league player. I mean, we're expecting major league production. We're not getting that right now out of, let's say, Henderson, right? I mean, even last year with Austin Hayes, to some degree, the fall. But, like, this is the balance of the J.J. Hardys and the Adam Joneses and the Nick Markakis, is to say, you got a lot of players, Machado at that time, Davis, what are you going to get out of them? And when you get 57 home runs out of day, you win a lot of games. And when you're getting – nobody was expecting that out of Chris Davis either, by the way, when I go back 10 years ago, as far as what Texas gave him away, right? This is how it gets better. The way in Chens, and these guys are just better for a little while. Rodriguez, a little better for a little while than you, or excuse me, Gonzalez. I was thinking Miguel Gonzalez. Better for a little while than you think they can be. And Mateo's that guy right here, right now. And this is sort of gumming up all of their the minor league route to who's going to be a shortstop, who's and what this is eventually going to look like when they're playing October winning baseball. Who are going to be the pile divers, as Buck would say, right? Mateo, didn't think he was one of them. All of a sudden, a month in, you're like, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said. I mean, you look at the walk rate, which is trended up. Again, not dramatic, but I mean, how about the fact this is a guy who struck out 147 times in 533 plate appearances a year ago? In his first 83 plate appearances, he has 12 strikeouts. I mean, that's not, especially in today's game, that's not very much at all. So, I mean, it's really impressive. And he's hit for power. He's got 11 extra base hits. So, again, I'm not saying he's going to continue to play at an MVP level, but boy,
he's no longer
really
Mark Belanger,
throwing cold
is what we're saying,
water
right?
On the detractors. Yeah. I mean, and look, this wasn't, the critics weren't being haters. The guy had a 267 on base percentage last year. I mean, that's not good enough for a starting player. But if you can, and I don't think it's going to continue to be 395 either, but if he can have a, I don't know, say a 330, a 325 on base percentage and is giving you some pop, and boy, he's fast as can be, and his defense is gold glove caliber. I mean, you're talking about a very valuable player there. You're talking about a guy there that you're not going to be anxious to trade unless
Jackson
Holliday
is
ready.
Gets on first base in the new system that gives the pitchers the squirts. I mean, anybody that creates speed on the base pass, yeah, it's changed the game for once you get on base and they can't sit there and play games with you all day and slow the game down and pick you off, that it's forced action. It's made the game better, and more guys like him are going to have more value. We're going to be revisiting the 1982 Cardinals and, having three or four guys in your lineup that when they get on base, change the pitcher's head. That's big. That's huge.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think the change is so dramatic that we're going to see this massive renaissance, but it's certainly adding that element of the game back into the conversation. There's no question about that. Specifically when you have Mateo and Mullins, who, by the way, were 1-2 in the AL and stolen bases last year. So it's not as though the Orioles didn't have that element, but we're seeing that play out even more so with the rules, as you mentioned. But I mean, we mentioned it. I can think back to way back when the Orioles first hired Mike Elias, and we were reading up on what happened with the Astros, putting aside the cheating scandal for just a moment. But as far as how they rebuilt that organization, the name that came up that was very prominent, that was not on the radar at all, was kind of a fringe kind of prospect, was who? Dallas Keuchel, right? And we saw how important he ended up being to their early years of success. And it really lends itself to what you just said. I mean, in the case of Jorge Mateo, I mean, this is a guy who was, in the Yankee system, and he was with the Padres. I mean, he was a waiver claim. The Orioles claimed him off waivers in 2021. I mean, guys are claimed off waivers, that they're not a prospect, right? I mean, they're someone that has been disposed of. They've been discarded. And the Orioles clearly did not think that they were going to get something like this, but they figured at the time, because, well, when you're a 110 loss kind of outfit, you can, one, you got the number one waiver claim, and two, you can take some chances on some guys that have washed out that might have some raw skills that you say, let's get them into our system with our technology and our player development and our coaches and our scouts, and let's see what we can make out of this guy. And hey, he did some nice things in limited action 2 years ago. He had a nice season last year, even with the on-base deficiency, but because of his speed and defense. And hey, he still hit 13 home runs last year. So it was clear there was some pop in there, so for him now to have the start that he's had this year, I mean, it's wild. And we've spent so much time talking about Adley Rutschman, and rightfully so, and Gunnar Henderson, and rightfully so, and Grayson Rodriguez and other, young prospects that are on the way and will continue to be on the way. But boy, you got a guy that was cast aside elsewhere, and he's been your best player over the first month of the season. So, I don't think he's going to hit 350 all year, but this has been a heck of a story, and he is a major reason why they're 10 games over 500 going into the month of May.
Yeah, you media types are all focused on those first and second round draft picks. You got to go with the undrafted free agents sometimes, you know? They go the overlooked. Luke Jones is never overlooked. He'll be covering Oriole baseball late into the night all week, Kansas City and Atlanta, and of course, all things draft. I'm assuming Lamar shows up for OTAs and will be around the building, and there'll be a Lamar love-in at some point here before it's all over with, courtesy of Chad Steele. We'll be monitoring all of that in Owings Mills as well as at Camden Yards, and from Kansas City, one of my favorite ballparks, where they still have a George Brett statue, which still makes it awesome to me. Although you and I did spend one lonely night there watching a lot of people in blue have a good time a number of years ago. It's a baseball week, it's football week, and it's a crab cake week as well. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour moves to Middle River. I'll be giving away the Maryland Lottery Instant Scratch-Offs, a throwback to the lottery's first ever scratch-off. We had some winners, lucky winners last week, down at Captain Larry's and down at Fadley's as well on Friday. We'll be on Thursday at McFall's Oyster and Reel in Middle River, homeland of Dave Johnson. I've contacted him. All that good stuff. We're going to have a great show. Thursday afternoon, 2 to 5, McFall's down in Middle River. Come on down and say hello as well. All the information, all of Luke's work can be found at Baltimore Positive. And if they sign Lamar again, we'll send another text. Or if they give Patrick Queen away, or if they call up another player, we'll do something. It's all brought to you by our friends at Coons Baltimore Ford. Dennis will be here on Thursday from 3 until 5 driving you home. No one more excited about all of this energy around town than Dennis. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore Positive.